Hi there, my name is Johnny Meatsack. Like you, I once held a normal life in a normal place with a normal job. I had a normal family. Hi, Karen. And simply thought I'd live my normal life to a normal death. One day, however, I experienced this thing called gnosis, a direct revelation of a truer but distant reality, and the realization that my reality was a fabricated construct. I discovered my life was a lie and my identity was as synthetic as Alexa or Siri, and that the universe itself was a penitentiary built by cosmic overlords to trap and feed off my dormant, authentic consciousness. Jiminy crickets, I thought. My only choices were to join an awareness-killing cult like a political party, or just kill myself. But by some luck or providence, Sophia's grace, I discovered Aeon Bitnostic Radio. Despite the host's creepy monologues and the show's blasphemous topics, I was able to develop the ability to uncover my authentic consciousness and deal with this prison planet. In other words, this gnosis grew until I was a fully divine being, no longer in the thrall of entities called Archons and their soul-numbing, amnesia-causing powers. Thank you, Aeon Byte, for waking me up to my true eternal nature. Everything is still normal these days, except me, Johnny Meatsack. I'm on the adventure of many lifetimes to be completely liberated from the Black Iron Prison. Indeed, we are all Johnny Meatsacks today, and we are all under the thrall of Le Demiurge. But welcome, everybody, to AM Byte, because this is where you come to find those red pill suppositories to, what you do with them, put them where the black hole sun don't shine, and to awaken to who you are. And glad to see everybody on this Saturn day. I hope everybody is enjoying your Memorial weekend or whatever you're doing. And today I am very excited for this show, because it's always great to have a researcher and which way admire and somebody who is a friend, and that is Maja Daou. Maja, thank you very much for coming back.
Oh, my pleasure, Miguel. I always have such a good time, and I'm so excited to talk to you today about these topics. It's so cool.
Indeed. And also, too, we've got another friend, and that is Graham Pong. Believe it or not, people, I've known Graham for like 15 years, and he knew me back when I was a Roman Catholic and a pretty conservative guy. Graham, how are you doing?
Very good, very good. Yeah, lots of twists and turns on our road together here.
Yeah,
and,
yeah,
very much looking forward to hearing about the dark side of astrology. I guess that'll be the black sun and some other stuff.
Indeed. Indeed. Yes, I see people going into the chat. Oh, Christina Marie, good to see you. Hello, Chester. And everybody else, as always, if you have any questions for Maja or complaints for me, please super chat them so we can separate them. And I also should mention that Maja was very helpful. She is one of the people that really helped me with the Elvis book. And in fact, we have an astrological chart started by the wonderful Kat Rose Nelligan. Shout out to her. And Maja also helped with that and just making the book very cool. So I think the world should hear that, right, Maja?
The world needs your book. So it's my divine pleasure to be able to assist you to get it out there into people's eyeballs.
Yes, I truly appreciate it. Yes, I'm actually turning in my last edits, as they say. Writers don't finish books. We abandon them. So I'm abandoning it, handing it over to Inner Traditions, to this wonderful editor named Chris. And then we shall work on the edits throughout the summer and the fall. So, and Maja has seen the cover, and I will show the cover in a month or two to the world itself. And yes, also too, I should mention, is Maja will be joining us at Astronosis, and I'm very excited about that. Here it is. There's the
website. I'm so thrilled. Yes.
Yes, we're very excited. So please join us August 9th and 10th at the Theosophical Society. We got a great speakership. We've got Richard Smoley, Ola Wolny, Chris Noe. There's Maja Daou with a very serious face. I feel like being one yes. of those guys. Come on, smile. Come on, why don't you smile, honey? Smile. No.
It's I get a great that a lot. Bit. Yes.
And yeah, great speakers, Dan Morse, Diane Kelly, Mitch Horowitz, James True, Steven Snyder, Dr. Will Peer. He told me about his presentation yesterday, and it's about realities, how they interact with us. So they're going to blow you away. Obviously, the overall theme is Sophian simulated realities. He's done incredible research. David Block will be discussing Hecate, because we need to talk about the divine feminine. Ryan will bring always amazing art and DJing. And there might be a speaker or two there. It's not all written in stone. So, Maja, what do you think you will be discussing?
I will be discussing the nature of what wisdom is, how we can use it in the simulated reality through like kind of a word nerd search and show. It's actually going to be, I hope, very entertaining, because a lot of people, as you know, think enlightenment is something that it isn't. So, right? It's made to be so glamorous, but really it's kind of like you become a babysitter and get tasked with doing counseling or providing counsel, which is really what Sophia is to us, right? So we do all these mirrors and mirroring of things all the way up and down, even through the dimensional simulations. Yeah.
Very true. And you'll also be doing a workshop too with Diane Kelly. We'll be doing a Sophianic workshop, and you will too, right?
Yes. Hopefully we'll get to kind of peer over the ledge, so to speak.
That's what it's all about. And that's what it's all about. Have you ever seen the movie Heathers?
Oh, I love that movie. Yes, of course.
To me, enlightenment is how Winona Ryder looks like after her psycho boyfriend, Christian Slater, blows himself, and she's with the cigarette all bloody and sooty.
It's very much like that. Yes, mm-hmm. Agree. Yeah.
And you walk in and you pick somebody who needs help and you just hang out with them.
Exactly. That's exactly correct. You hold hands and you talk, really, you know?
Indeed, indeed. So, so very excited. So please get your tickets for Astronosis. We look forward to seeing you there. The talks are great, but the real magic happens in the hallways, at the socials, in the parking lots, when you connect with people and you really exchange ideas and things come out that are so beyond secret, beyond esoteric, and friendships are made, because technology is great, but they are trying to divide us. And one way they divide us is with technology. So we have to play the other game, you know?
When three or more gather in her name, she will be there. So I think there'll be a lot of magic.
Amen, for sure. Well, awesome. Well, the main event we are here is to talk about, Maja's new book, which was just an amazing read, Astrology of the Shadow Self, Working with Oppositions in Your Natal Chart. And as I've told people, Maja's book on the I Ching, I use it every day or every other day when I'm doing readings. And it's been a real help. Your book on familiars is just amazing. So this one is also so cool. But before we get into that, some people might not know who you are. Maybe talk about how you became a heretic, a evil witch. How did that happen? How did you fall from grace?
Yes, I was born this way. So it was more about a series of realizations that's what I had to do, because I just disagreed with everybody, which is part of the topic of the book, is like, everybody seems so, you know, like Johnny Meatsack, as your wonderful video so eloquently puts it. And then if you have some kind of opposing view or view that deviates, right? So you're a deviant, suddenly it's a threat to the bubble egregore that everybody else is sort of part of. So using techniques of dissent or exploration is really what got me interested in paganism and witchcraft, because it's all ways to kind of come into greater awareness using divination to try to make sense of this reality, which is not what we think that it is, and trying to do like Nancy Drew type of investigations to just get more data on what the heck is going on around here. But I have been interested in these subjects, I mean, as long as I can remember. I would argue with the priest when we would go to church as a child. So it was kind of just my deal from the get-go. Yeah.
Yeah, and when I read your books, what I like is that your thesis is really pretty much laser pointed or whatever. I mean, you say, this is what this book is about, whether it's familiars or the I Ching, but you cast such a wide net. I mean, you bring in mythology, comparative religion, psychology, politics. How do you do that? I feel like Stewie and Family Guy when people are playing peekaboo. How do you do that? I mean, it's so broad, but it all comes together around the thesis.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear that, because I always aim for that target to try to be broad but focused at the same time. So it's for me, I'm lucky because I just read a lot. So it's my nerdiness. So I kind of can gather from all of these different categories, and then I can see the correspondences or patterns in the things that pertain to it. So for example, like with shadow work, so many people only think of Carl Jung, right? If you talk to anybody about the shadow, they only think of Carl Jung, but they don't understand that Carl Jung got these concepts from his reading books about alchemy and paganism and being in Vienna, talking to other people that were involved with these kinds of studies, like Sigmund Freud, who were all actively investigating these things. So one of the things I really wanted to do was broaden people's understanding of what the shadow is and really let them know that this is a concept that has been around a long time. You know, no offense to Carl Jung, but and he never says that he like came up with it either. So no, he's very good, obviously, about citing his sources. But it's such a human situation, the shadow, that of course, funnily, most people don't know about it, because as shadows go, they tend to be good at sticking under the radar. So I thought it was really important as part of the book to show and display the wide range, including mythology and nature as well. I feel like including the just how the natural world contains these kinds of behaviors and energies, so that we don't, you know, categorize things as evil, you know, or, you know, people holding these behaviors as evil, so that we target and scapegoat them, which I feel like is kind of equivalent to targeting someone because they pee, right? Like everybody's got a shadow, and we have negative, terrible behaviors as human beings. So I'm kind of tired of people just scapegoating individuals that are expressing some of these behaviors, and then everyone's like ignoring the larger picture of how shadows exist in this reality.
Yeah, indeed. And as Wolf will explore, it wasn't not uncommon. It's almost like we lost that. And that's what was great about Freud and Jung and Adler, is like they taught us, you know, we have a soul, we have a subconscious, call it the spiritual world or whatever, but there is a part of us that the ancients knew about, and humans forgot it during the Enlightenment and the rational age. And that's why everybody was so damn neurotic in the 19th century. They needed help.
That's why. Yes, agree.
And they brought it back. But from Jung, I think we should address it first, because people, again, like you said, shadow has become very trendy in the occult new age, just like synchronicity. In fact, It's amazing. Don't you think it's amazing that after 100 years, Jung is so fresh and trendy, and it seems so, his ideas seem so vibrant, and everybody's embracing them. I mean, look at Jordan Peterson and all these other really popular thinkers are,
yes,
are just, yeah, just going nuts over him. And it, it continues. They are
leaving out his shadow, though, you know, like Carl Jung's shadow has been continually left out. He was, a human with a shadow, just like everybody else. You know, I mentioned in the book, when I look at some of his shadow planets, he was accused of rape by women and notoriously got the nickname the Bull of Zurich for his exploits in that department and some unethical behavior as someone's doctor or analyst in some of the choices that he made. He personally was very aware of his own shadow and, of course, goes into it in a lot of depth in the Red Book, which I don't know if you've looked at. I assume you have a copy. But in the Red Book, too, they had so much trouble publishing the Red Book because they were afraid of what it would do to Carl Jung's legacy. Right. And he... This is something I have gone over a lot through the years, is many of these scholars or people that research and present information on occult material have to distance themselves from affiliation or practice of occult techniques because they will get stigmatized or, you know, not taken seriously. And Jung and Freud had discussions with each other about how they could not publicly discuss how they had some, you know, meditative techniques or practices because it would threaten their ability to be taken seriously in the circles of scholars, you know?
Very true. Yeah. And he did cast a big shadow. As I keep saying, one of my favorite sayings today when people are going, trying to be, when they're projecting their shadow on other people, which people do on Jung and everybody else.
Yes.
I liked him. I liked him not because I knew him, but because he helped me like myself. And that's whether it's a rock star or somebody. And then months later, you find out, oh my God, they did terrible things. But, you know, they were put in our life as a mirror, a way of us helping us go down. And everybody has a shadow. And Jung himself said, the bigger the personality, the bigger the shadow. It's just, it's gods have the biggest shadows. It's cosmic law.
You can't get out of it because it's nature, you know? And part of, I think, the condemning and repressing shadow so that we can't make progress with some of these negative behaviors is that it's related to how our relationship with nature is, right? And Sophia, for that matter, as well. So it's the removal of those things from our beingness that is causing an exacerbation of these behaviors getting dealt with incorrectly, in my opinion.
Very true. Yeah. I mean, you can't repress the shadow, but you can't just allow it like so many rock stars to roam around and never integrate it and go, oh, it's my shadow. You destroy the hotel room. You had affairs. I mean, no, you can't do that either. But I think it's interesting. One thing about Jung and shadow. Well, let me back up again. The shadow is a complex, as Jung said, and I think that's where modern people or a lot of people, modern esoteric people, and I keep repeating it, the complex, his complex ideas are the most important thing he had, more than synchronicity, the collective unconscious, you name it, complexes are, and that's the one part that everybody kind of skips over. So I keep giving that warning, and it's the hardest thing to deal with because you can't defeat your complexes. You can't overcome them. You can't dispel them. Somehow you just have to, as Gordon White said, you have to out become larger than them, but even then they're still there. So that's your shadow. But the shadow, I think in a normal way, and I forget who was a Jungian analyst who said it, is everything I do not wish to be. And that's a simple way to deal with it because in Jungian terms, a shadow sometimes is not bad. It's not your traumatized childhood or whatever it is. It's something good. Like for example, you were a kid and you started playing the piano, or you started playing soccer and you realized this is what I want to be. You've had that urge, that call and whatever. But then as life came and, oh, I need to go to university, you had relationships, you kind of pushed it away. Yes. And that creates a shadow. And yes, it manifests throughout your life in weird ways, disease. Maybe every time you listen to the piano, you get anxiety. But it's a good thing that wants to come out and say, yes, hey, learn. Let's go back and play the piano. Doesn't mean we can play the piano at weddings or at a bar like Billy Joel. Doesn't mean we have to be like a rock star, but something like that. Don't you agree?
You said it so well. It's something that gets subverted, but it's a desire that's natural. And it, if you do it, you know, you have kids like I do, you can see you can't repress them or they're going to act out. And so the shadow is the same way. If you think you can eliminate some natural desire that you have, it's, you're going to get disease. You're going to become ill, right? So you have to, but we can't always do it. So we have to be able to raise awareness about what this is and how to accommodate it, how to provide mechanisms for it so that individuals have a higher awareness of the importance of being able to dance with their shadow and give it some expression and give it like safe places to run around, you know?
Yeah, yeah, very true and agree. So, but as you said, Jung wasn't the first one, and this comes from a very ancient tradition. So why don't we explore that? Of course, as I emailed you the other day, I was like, oh, let's raise some hackles. I got something here. And that was towards the beginning of your book, Astrology of the Shadow Self. You say the darkness belongs to the divine feminine. Tell us about that so you can maybe make some feminist irate out there.
I mean, it's as simple as looking at Kali, right? Like, it's no mystery, but for some reason that gets left out a lot. So the dark feminine is power, right? Like Kali, who comes out and is pure power, which is horrifying, right? It's also the where creation comes from. So the when I say divine feminine too, it's not like a gender statement. It's an energetic correspondence to the type of energy that it has. And that's negative energy. And when we say negative energy, people think that means bad, right? Right. No. We live in a universe that has protons and electrons. Electrons are negative energy. And you can't get rid of it, right? Negative ions are necessary for life, and you're not going to be able to just remove it because you don't like it or it's scary or it's dangerous, right? So very much the darkness of the divine feminine and negative energy is what permits life to exist, right? Our entire galaxy theoretically came and was birthed out of a supermassive black hole, for example. A lot of the inquiries into origins of matter find out that it comes from dark matter, right? Mm-hmm. And that actually makes up the majority of the universe. We have antimatter. So like you mentioned in that quote, everything that is not me, right? A big inspiration for how I figured out how to do the shadow chart was the concept of the Antichrist or the anti-self, which is the shadow work, like you said, is everything that you detest and despise, which obviously is very uncomfortable, but is part of that totality of reality, which includes that dark feminine energy, that cave, the womb, the mm-hmm. place that is still death, right? It's the womb to tomb energy is dark feminine energy, and we don't have control over it. So everybody freaks out about it. It's the collective unconscious, right? So that by nature is feminine because it's just like if something is created or born, it must be like have a place of quiet, a place of rest so that it can be nurtured and it can grow. If we had just everything go, 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 like we're kind of taught in this culture where you just have to keep going and do stuff all the time and never sit and rest, right? Maybe do some meditation, do a little reflection, do a little introspection. This is divine feminine stillness, energy of that cave, of that womb, of that tomb, right? Yes.
Well said. And again, this tradition existed in ancient times. I think you bring up a few of these goddesses, and you just brought up Kali, which she's the most famous one, but you bring up in Hinduism, you got Chaya, and of course, in the Sumerian myth, you've got Ereshkigal, who, she's a pretty cool lady. She eats clay and drinks dirty water. She has no loving mother, father, brother, or sister. She's quite a lady.
Quite a lady. You don't hear enough about her, honestly. And it's also the idea of this counterpart, right? So our shadow in a lot of the ancient world is our underworld double, right? Mm-hmm. So that I don't think people talk about this idea enough, but in witchcraft and paganism, it's called a shade, right? Mm. We call it our shade, and there is actually a lot of work, not so much in the pop culture, of course. There are a lot of these, I feel like the way people are engaging now in pop culture is they're having these workbooks where you do journaling to kind of do shadow work, which isn't exactly the same as in these esoteric traditions. It was underworld work, which, like you mentioned, one of the speakers we'll be getting into is Hecate, right? Mm-hmm. And the underworld goddesses. Underworld because it's literally under the earth where we go when we die. So if we understand that space-time isn't linear, our dead self already exists. Wait, I'm going to say it again. You as your dead self already exist in time space. Right? Love when it. You do certain shamanic techniques, like I learned with Dr. Kelvin DeWolf, you're taught to go before you're born and after you die. And so part of doing shadow work means you have to have a confrontation with your death, right? It's a little bit like when Luke Skywalker goes into the tree and sees Darth Vader, right? And it's his own face. It's kind of like that type of experience, but your shade is here the whole time, almost like beckoning to you and trying to kill you, trying to draw you closer to it. So it's really just better to learn techniques to integrate and kind of close that gap and bring it together. And in classical philosophy, they talked about it all the time too. One of my favorites is, and I mentioned this in the Familiars book, is Percy Shelley's double or shade. Mm-hmm. Other people literally saw, right? And there's several stories in around that time period where people reported seeing individuals double shadow or shade as a manifestation of a thing. Yeah.
Pretty scary. So you could say Ereshkigal is Inanna's shadow. They're sisters, but they're the same. And then and I think in the Hebrew, you've got Ashira, but then you've got Anat, who's my favorite because somebody mentioned Sekhmet Kali, but Anat was even worse. I mean, she was just she was a whore. She would sleep with anybody. She would eat anybody.
How dare she?
I know. She was like out of control. And then there's that story where Baal goes down to death and gets killed, and he's trapped in the underworld. She goes down and kills death to get him out. That's right. What she's like.
That's how gnarly. Like, you got to be pretty gnarly to kill death. Yeah.
She's obviously Artemis also scares me, but I actually worship her because Artemis has a little bit of compassion, little bit there. But so you have, again, Ashira, Anat, maybe Sekhmet, Isis, all these goddesses have sort of their shadow. And we forget, too, that Persephone, when she's a goddess of spring, but when she goes underworld, she takes her job seriously. She's got her papers and her office. She's the goddess of death. Hades she's is the goddess of the end.
Damned. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes, she is. She is. That's she's right. like, and she is, Odysseus says that when he's in Hades, the one god or creature that he's afraid of is Persephone, because that's her shadow side.
That's right. Exactly. And we can't get out of it. And part of it is universal physics. Okay. Like everything that is has an anti-thing.
Mm.
That's the physical universe that we're dealing with. We have a thing and you have a no thing, and everything has a double. Every piece of particle of matter has an antichrist to it, including us, right? A lot of people, when we think about physics or biology or science, we tend to leave ourselves out of it. And right, when we're reading about entanglement or things like this, we forget, hey, that's also us, right? So I think it's really important for people to integrate these concepts of physics that include these ideas with also ourselves and how, as human beings and the matter that we're made up of, they obey these same laws.
Exactly. Well said. And what about you, Graham? Let's bring you in. Graham is in the comic book industry. Are you thinking of The Shadow, or how Hulk is the shadow of Dr. Banner, or Batman is the shadow of Gotham, or anything like that?
Well, one of the obvious ones that jumps out to me is Cloak and Dagger, where you had, you know, the one the girl was the light and the boy was the dark, and the symmetry between the two of them. And you got to agree with you on a knot there, 100%. You know, another one, like I said, Sandman fits into that one. You know, the Sandman and the Shade. The Shade was another good character. He was kind of one of those anti-villains, you know, not quite villain, not quite hero kind of characters.
Exactly. Well, that's always used. I have this weird thing that I like horror movies. I don't watch a lot of TV, but once a week I watch a really intense horror movie, and my wife is disgusted when I tell her the plot. So, I'm just doing shadow work.
It's I kinda true, am. It is. You are. My boyfriend loves horror movies too. He's like an insane Clive Barker fan.
Necessary.
And the thing about horror is that facing and confronting death and the gore and our physical bodies, which we just don't tend to do as we float through the day in our heads, you know? So having those confrontations, I view it as like practicing, right? It's like practicing the confrontation.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
for sure. Another thing you wanted to discuss too, we're talking about, is the idea of virginity and the goddess.
Yes. I think one of the reasons people have a hard time wrapping their minds around the power of the dark feminine energy is because of how it's been so distorted by concepts of sexuality over the course of the years. And in a lot of these ancient texts, they're using these words that aren't just talking literally about sexuality. So there's other meanings of the word virgin. It doesn't mean a woman that hasn't had sex, right? In a lot of those concepts. And when you get into the histories of the Vestal virgins and what activities they were actually performing and what a lot of these services were, they were helping people through death, through underworld things, right? This whole school of the virgins was meant to assist people to have initiations into these goddess mysteries, which were about confronting your shade, confronting the shadow. So this was some of the most ancient form of shadow work was done by creating a kind of space like that. The virgin use of that word was also applied to women in terms of the Vestal virgins that didn't take orders from a husband.
Mm.
They had their own thoughts. So back in the day, women weren't permitted to make decisions, right? Because that was more the landholder's job. Even a lot of men weren't permitted to make decisions. So I don't even feel like it was gender-based. I feel like it's a statement about not having an overlord making these choices for you. And so part of the shadow work is that you must virginize your mind, because otherwise you will be under the oppression of your shadow will lord you and drive your decision making. Much like you said with the repression of the piano playing, if you aren't your own master, your shadow lord will come after you, which is like what we were talking about too in our emails. That's where the archons come into the situation, because as you deny these parts of yourself, they're going to subconsciously leave you open to being run by an archon.
Definitely. And yeah, and as we talked, virgin was also an honorific title. Aphrodite was called a virgin. Isis, it meant a complete woman who knew herself, a very powerful goddess in Gnosticism. Barbello is called the Virgin Mother, even though she kind of gives birth to the entire universe. And of course, wouldn't you say the great Gnostic poem or a text, Under the Perfect Mind, that's it, right? It's got shadow. Right. It's got I am the virgin and the whore. It's got everything you need.
Mm-hmm. Completely accurate. Yes. So I feel like it's a shame because so many people with their hangups and repression of shadow end up diverting the shadow because they can't handle the idea of sexuality. Right. So it's pretty ironic. I feel like that's the way that it went down. But it's just shadow behavior to place that meaning of the word virgin in there and the importance on it. Yeah.
Indeed. Yes, we've got, for those of you who are just joining us, Maja Daou is here to discuss her book, Astrology of the Shadow Self. Highly recommend it. I don't do astrology, and like I've talked to Maja, I know I'm projecting my shadow. I've got some blockage about the stars. You've helped me work with this, the stars, and I can do I Ching, but something I really have a really bad trauma about these damn stars. I just like go blank, but at least I'm at the stage where I'm a little bit getting closer to the complex and height, far from outgrowing it, but it is a process. And for all your books, these are all your drawings, right?
They are. Yes. I do the art in there as well. It's all illustrated. There's lots of art in it to help. I feel like it's helpful for people to visualize some of the concepts with the art. I don't know. It helps me all the time. So, and it's fun to do. Yeah.
Yeah. It's very cool. Yeah. All your books have the same vibe, and you've got that art behind you. Talk about the masks and the mind parasites. So
yes,
it's all there.
It's true.
While we are on the topic of ancient times, you said even the Egyptians knew about it with this concept of the shoot. That's like one of our souls, right? Or could you tell the audience about that?
Yeah, it's the one that is underworld, right? So I don't know how familiar people are with Egyptian kind of myths or creation stories, but in a lot of the papyrus that are left and what we have, which, by the way, I don't know if people know this, but there's so many even untranslated papyri that they've, I think a lot of them are sitting in the basement museum in London, probably. But it's like so much work. That is one of the things they're going to try to get AI to do. I've been reading that they're going to set to task AI to try to translate a bunch of these scrolls, which is kind of cool. So maybe we'll find some more data. But a lot of the scrolls would talk about the underworld predominantly. Obviously, everybody knows how they would make mummies and kind of that process. But one of the main purposes of the creation of the mummy was to preserve portions of the soul. And so they would depict images and talk at length in a lot of the papyrus, especially papyrus of Ani or Anu, I forget which one it is off the top of my head. And then, of course, in the Book of Coming Forth by Day, which is mostly known as the Book of the Dead, it's all up in there, all over the place. So they have so much information and data about it. It's kind of remarkable. Even in occult circles, people don't talk about the shade business so much. Yeah.
Indeed. Yeah. Again, it's trendy, but once you get down and dirty, whew,
yes,
the places you will go. Oh, so painful sometimes.
So true. And with the astrology too, I know it is like maybe to confront part of your shadow. It's very data heavy, right? So I think approaching astrology for a lot of people in a way that's deeper than looking at your horoscope in the back of Cosmopolitan magazine, you're looking at familiarizing yourself with a lot of concepts, a lot of technical information, symbolism, you know, that you then have to kind of learn and memorize. But ultimately, it's very much mythology, and it has archetypes in the system of astrology. So if you know mythology, it's not that daunting. And I really like a lot of astrologers who approach it from that angle of the story of the myths. And I feel like for like if there's listeners out there that just can't deal with astrology, try to view it from that angle, that it's kind of like a narrative or soap opera about how the characters interact with each other is essentially the gist of it. So by looking at astrology to do shadow work, I certainly wasn't the first person to put those two things together. A lot of astrologers are Jungians too, because Carl Jung did a lot of astrology, right? Yeah. And divination, obviously, he talked about it all the time. And so to use the chart, your natal chart, to get information about your shadow, I feel like it's just a valuable tool that we can engage so that we can, you know, not have to do maybe all this work because our shadow acts up. So we can bring a lot of it up into our awareness by dealing with it on the archetype or archon level through the astrology.
No, makes perfect sense. So maybe explain it or let me know if we're hot or cold, because again, yesterday we had David Block, Chester, he's a listener. They're both into Lurianic Kabbalah. Uh-huh. I love Lurianic Kabbalah. I love, yes. Isaac. I love, yeah. And also, obviously, I love Shabbatai Zevi, because I think he's just, again, he's like Elvis and David Bowie. He's just, and Jung, such a mess, but such a brilliant mind and magician. But anyway, I like these crazy people. But in the Kabbalah, obviously, there's the Sephiroth, but most people ignore the fact that there is probably a left hand, a shadow Sephiroth in there.
Yes.
Is this more or less what we're dealing with? There's a shadow separate
exactly chart? That's correct. So I've been doing divination, I don't even know at this point, probably like 30 years, not to, you know, tell my age or anything, but I'm actually kind of old, older than I think a lot of people think. But anyway, so if you look at most divination systems, they all have a reverse element to them. So I Ching, a lot of the hexagrams, you can flip them upside down and they're the other hexagram, they have like a mated pair. So with the archetypes as well, if you look at archetypes, they're going to have like relationships or marriages or partnerships with these components, these other sides of themselves, right? Like Superman and Bizarro kind of deal.
Of course. Classic example.
I know. So maybe Graham will appreciate that. But it is. It's like the alter egos of superheroes and comics, and the creation of these alter egos that are in these partnerships and forms is part of the symbolism. So the Sephiroth are absolutely in that, and you're not really going to get a revelation from any particular Sephiroth unless you deal with its opposition, because you're not going to get it in its totality. You're going to only be getting half the story, right? So to look at and examine their pairs or partners that are their shades, you kind of aren't really going to get those revelations until you're able to even have that concept that there's going to be part of it that you can't see or can't know. And then you're going to have to receive the unknowingness, that darkness, that alter ego, the Antichrist, and then you're going to be able to proceed through it.
Fascinating. Yeah, I didn't know about the I Ching. So in astrology, how would it work? And again, I have no idea how it works, but
yes.
I know you sent the graphic. Let's see.
Yeah, the graphic I feel like does a pretty good job. So as I was thinking about it, and I do shadow work with people all day long in my work.
Oh, okay, good.
As I was thinking about the chart, I was like, oh my God, you can just flip it. Like, it's literally just a reversal that you can do. So I had the insight that you could make an entire chart based on your birth chart just by making a mirror image of it and creating that anti image of it, which would be basically just the exact oppositional position. So for example, let's say you are an Aries and you have an Aries sun. That means your shadow sun would be Libra, right? Mm-hmm. If you're Sagittarius like me, your shadow is going to be Gemini, right? It's just going to be directly opposite. For those that don't know, your birth chart is on a circle, right? Like you see in the image, right. It looks like a pizza or a pie, right? And right. So that circle is 360 degrees, obviously, and then it's split. So if you go to the 180 degree point away from any planet in your chart, you'll find the shadow. So very much like how we have a shadow, if the light hits me, the shadow is going to be 180 degrees behind me, right?
Makes sense, yeah.
When you turn and you're facing the light, your shadow is projected behind you, right? So it's exactly that. And it happens in reality in outer space. If the sun is hitting Jupiter, Jupiter casts a shadow. All of the planets cast a shadow in real life. And this we can see with eclipses, right? When there's a shadow that comes from that. Every single night, we fall into the Earth's shadow. Night is literally the Earth's shadow. So the planets have physical, real umbras or shadows that they project, and it's done by tracking it in that way. So I was like, oh my God, I have to write a book about this because it's a perfect way to find your oppositional partner, right? And what I've been finding as I go through this with people is that a lot of people are partners with their shadows. They'll have them in their lives, like sisters, brothers, friends. They'll always have somebody around them that's holding that sun that is their shadow or oppositional energy. Sometimes it could be like your nemesis, right? If you have, I encourage people, it's kind of interesting because if you have a nemesis and you look up their sun sign, it might be your shadow. So there could be something very specific that you have to learn from this enemy through the oppositional relationship. Yeah.
Fascinating. So when you work with clients, you're not just giving them astrological readings, but you're giving them a shadow astrological reading as well. And that's don't want to abuse the word, more holistic. It's
it
more
is.
Total or
it is. Yes. It's
people don't freak side. Out.
Well, if someone's dealing with an issue, like most people will, it's funny. My client the other day was like, well, you know, I have something going on if I call you, because a lot of the times they'll call me if they're dealing with something, right?
Yeah.
So to get the insight, if you can include the shadow nature of what's going on so that they can confront that element, it can give a lot of understanding to the situation is what I find.
No, yeah. For sure. And again, I think it's more complete than the idea of syzygies and dualities. I mean, I'm thinking Most people assume Aphrodite was the goddess of love, but she was also the goddess of war. Same with Athena, wisdom, war.
That's right.
These gods were more complex. They had their, they didn't have jobs, but again, Persephone, spring, death. They had to deal with their own shadow side and work with them, and they were one and the same.
That's correct. So if you're having like any kind of thing that you're dealing with, or even a block that you can't seem to get past, looking into some of these shadow archons or archetypes, or as I say in the book, I call them darketypes.
Darketypes. I love it.
Because there are darketypes, and you have to include that in your awareness. I do feel like even if it's too crazy to get into some of them, because obviously there's a lot of trauma involved in shadows. Yeah. So it's not just fun and games. And there's going to be either you receiving trauma from somebody holding a shadow behavior, or you've been traumatized too. It's not fun to get into for sure, but it's very helpful when you can raise it into your awareness, because then you can kind of like release or integrate some aspects of it.
Yeah, I think that's what worries a lot of people, because obviously you are going to deal with trauma, and you are going to deal with trauma that you might not even know about. So yes. How do you prepare clients for that one? I mean, I have my techniques, but let us know about yours.
I usually just dive right in.
Yeah.
It's like, prepare them.
I've been to so many therapists and AA meetings. I think I've just like spilled my entire life.
It's good to do that, you know? It's cathartic. So usually I'll just kind of bring it up and see if they would like to take a look at it. So I'll try to, I guess I don't really prepare them, but it's more like an invitation to see, or like a disclaimer. If I'm going to enter some territory, to see if they have, a desire to get into it or not. But most of the time they approach me because they're, you know, they need to do that thing. So it's what we're there to do. Yeah.
Yeah. The pain becomes, eventually the pain is so unbearable. You're like, I'll face my demons. I'm just going to do it. I think.
That's right.
For me, I know active imagination has worked a lot. In other words, if trauma comes my way, I will just immediately create a situation where I hug my younger self, or I hug that person that hurt me. And I realize I'm in charge of reality. Time is not linear. It's all a story. So it works very well. It wasn't at first. It was a bit hard, but now I'm like, okay, this is good. I can face these things.
You can. We can do it. We really can. And it's funny you do the hug, because that's one of the things I say in the book, is you have to cradle your shadow like a child. You know, you have to, the way that we're going to deal with this isn't going to be through public shamings or, you know, crucifixions, because it's just heads of a hydra. For every person you crucify for murdering someone, right, there's going to be a million more that are going to do it again. So there has to be some kind of way that we can have a breakthrough as human beings to kind of keep it close to our chest in that hug way, to not send it away or, you know, cast it out, because it's not, you're not going to cast it out. We're going to have to figure out how to hug it out.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think it should be all like that movie Good Will Hunting with Robin Williams hugs. It's not your fault. It's not. Yeah. When we were children, bad things happened to us. Bad things happened in past lives. It wasn't our fault. We were at the wrong place at the wrong time, and this immense pain. And there were times in our lives we lost it. But just go and said, you know, you were insane at the time. You were not wise. You were carrying on this ancestral lineage of abuse, or allowing yourself to be abused, or addiction. So there's a solution. But like you said, shame is bad. And I love your example, Maja. You talk about Cain and Abel is the great example. I think Abel is kind of like a shadow, because he tries to bury it. And what does Abel do? Screams from the ground. And
that's right,
like the telltale heart.
His blood screams. It is like the telltale heart. That's you're exactly on point with that one. It's, you can't, you're not going to be able to bury the corpse. Like, but then it's a big deal for everybody's got to help each other, because if you've been a victim of some kind of person's shadow trauma upon you, you're not going to be able to like deal with it and like heal that person. That's toxic positivity too. And I talk about that in the book as well. I don't like that garbage one bit. So you can't just like think you can heal this if someone's like, you know, been abused or something terrible. So we all have to help each other with this shadow integration and with accountability for the people trying to find different ways to deal with it. But I do feel like, as I say in the book, that if we can raise our awareness up to it, that could be like a pretty good starting point. And then I like your active imagination technique. I'm going to have to start using that one too.
No, I need as many tools. Yeah. If you have to, like I said, I'm always asking for tools when you deal, especially when you get into that like red pill moment where you go, oh my God, I did this to that person, or that person did this to me, or some ancestor speak, you know, it's kind of like in the movies where the camera just like pans into you and you hear that music, and, or like in The Sixth Sense, when he realized he's the dead person, so you might realize you're the shadow in this world.
Sometimes you're the bad guy, you know, and I think that's, I mean, Greg, you in comics, maybe you can chime in here with like that idea of the villain and how the villain holds that space and how everyone just wants to see themselves as the hero. But we want to like vicariously see the villain in these stories, but never identify with that villain.
Yeah. Isn't Batman, Superman, Shadowgram?
Yeah, I was going to say some of that has definitely changed, you know, with Alan Moore and some of the more modern writers. But, you know, for a lot of it, it's the idea that the villain is the hero of their own story, that their motivation is, they don't see their motivation as necessarily bad. They just see it as basically a different goal than what the hero has. And I was just going to throw my tool on, as far as that goes, is radical acceptance, where, you know, it's basically a judgment free, as you just view it as cause and effect, that happened. You don't view it as a, you know, good or bad. That's a higher level one, but you have to accept that it did happen. That's my big toolkit for accepting there. So thanks.
That's a big deal, acceptance. I feel like it's really hard to get there for everybody. So that could be good enough, you know, that's a goodie. Yeah.
Indeed it is. Well, here's a couple of super chats before I get to a few more questions. Baza Novik, we love serious witches. Well, there you go, Maja. Thank you. You're a serious witch. Thank you for that. And then Chester, he says, may I borrow darketypes? Is that how we should spell it?
I like it. Borrow it. It's probably other people have thought of it. I haven't looked it up, but I just was like writing the book and I was like, oh my God, these are total archetypes. I like your spelling of it. I can't remember how I spelled it in the book, but go for it. That's good.
I have it too. I think you write, let's see, D-A-R-C-H.
Oh, C-H, yeah.
Types. Yeah. So that's how you changed it. Awesome. And what would you say, since we're talking about Gnosticism, because I was thinking, people always say the Demiurge is Sophia's shadow, but I always think Sophia is the Pleroma's shadow. And there's no wrong or right. You know, these myths, you play with the ideas because, you know, the Pleroma needed to figure out, well, I am the eternal mind, but I've got to contemplate negative things, so we're just going to throw it on Sophia and kick her out of the place. They did it with Cybele, right? Yeah, that's like, you know, somebody's got to carry these dark thoughts, we're manifestation, so it's going to be you, bye.
Well, and then they fall, right? So when that gets put like on Sophia, I'm going to be talking about this at the conference, actually, this part of the story. But when they fall, it's the descent into matter, right? So the shadow, which is why we have dark matter all over the place. So that, ironically, those stories of the ancient Gnostics are true in physical reality in terms of physics, right? With how the material world is. And so these goddesses who are the creator aspect that has to be done with, that's like in the Kabbalah, it's the Chokmah, right? Mm-hmm. No. Which I'll get into a lot more there at the conference, but the Chokmah is necessary and a component of creation. So the shadow gets projected on Sophia, and then there's the fall so that it can like precipitate into matter and matter can come into being, right? Mm-hmm. And then it gets husked, right? It gets put in the husk or the the cloak, the veil, the cloak and dagger cloak. I love that example that Graham made. But you have to, in Gnosticism, they're actually describing a process of matter coming into being through the shadow of that, which then, of course, the demiurge would be, right? Because that's what it is.
Hey, shining crazy diamonds. Please subscribe for the second part of this interview. It certainly helps grow this Red Pill cafeteria. What's more, beyond getting the second half, you get content earlier and don't have to worry about flapdoodle commercials here or on other public platforms. So please become a Red Circle sub, Patreon, or AB Prime member for the full consciousness expanding gnosis. At Patreon, I have tiers as low as $1 or $3 a month. And at Red Circle, it's a clean $4.99 a month to stream all full shows. All subs include a dedicated private stream that works on most apps. Don't forget the Gnostic Tarot, which is selling well and optimizing spiritual growth based on the feedback I've gotten, and the Virtual Alexandria Academy. I can't do it without you. Thanks for being here. Thanks for being yourself, your true self, here in the desert of the real. Hello and goodbye, as always.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.